Christina Leonard and Matthew Ottignon, welcome to Now's the Time. Well, firstly, how did the group Compass come about? Whose brainchild was it? How long has the group been performing?
One of the other guys in the group, Luke Gilmore, approached me and said, would I like to be in a saxophone quartet? I'm a classical player. And I said, I'd love to be, as long as it wasn't a classical quartet. I'm really interested in playing with musicians from a, you know, wide variety of genres. And I said, well, if there's two jazz players in it, I'd really like to be in it. And he said, who are we going to get? And the two best players in Sydney, of course, are Matt Ottignon and Jeremy Rose. So phoned them up and said, would they like to join us? And with the idea, actually, to not only play music for the saxophone quartet, but to play music with other instrumentalists and vocalists, and from, you know, just crossing over between a wide variety of styles. And
hence the guests on this album. And
this
is this
album.
The first album for the group, yeah. Compass?
It is. It is.
Great. And it's on the Tall Poppies label.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting how this album actually even came about, because when I got approached to join the band, I was very interested to see what it would sound like, and wasn't quite sure what we were going to play until I turned up at the first rehearsal. And we went through some sort of charts that Christina had brought along, and we played them through, and they sounded great. And then she said, so who are we going to get to write our music?
I don't want to play stuff that other people have played. I want to do something new.
And after discussing it for a while, we sort of came to this idea of recording an album. Well, not recording, just playing some music of tango music and getting some musicians in Sydney to write the music. And one of the saxophone players in the quartet, Jeremy, wrote one third of the music, and Marcello and Julian, who I play with in Monsieur Camembert, wrote the other two thirds. And
we were lucky enough to get some funding to do that from Ars Musica Australis. Arthur Bridge really got behind us there, which was fantastic.
Now, I want to go back to the inspiration for the tango, because as you've said, it's inspired by Nouveau Tango, and the originator, I guess, of that music is Astor Piazzolla. And now, he was an Argentinian bandoneon player and composer, but can you tell us a little bit about him, and maybe in layman's terms, the difference between Nouveau Tango and traditional tango for our listeners?
I think the difference with Nuevo Tango and traditional tango is, a comment that Astor said, and the difference there, the main difference is that it's music, tango for the ears rather than the feet. So it's music that you can sit back and listen to and not necessarily have to dance to. And it explores jazz and contemporary harmonies, and it just goes beyond a pretty strict mould, I suppose. I mean, Astor went to study in France with Nadia Boulanger, who was a really prominent teacher. And he, for, you know, a good few months with her, was trying to fit into this mould of other people's music and writing stuff that he thought that she'd like. And she just kept saying to him, yeah, this is just doesn't quite fit, you know. Write me something that you used to right back in Argentina, and he wrote her some tangos, and she said, what are you wasting your time writing that other stuff for? And so sort of through his association with her, he was able to grapple with more contemporary harmonies and incorporate other elements of different styles of music into the music that he knew so well and that he'd been writing and arranging for since he was quite young.
He had a rather long career throughout the 20th century, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
When did he really first hit the scene? Was it in the late 30s or...?
Yeah, you could say that, actually, because he became quite closely associated with Carlos Gardel, and when Gardel went to New York to shoot some films. And lucky for him, actually, his father didn't let him go back to Argentina with Gardel, because the plane that they all would have been on, well, that Astor would have been on, crashed. So Gardel died in this flight that Astor would have been on. So Gardel kind of took him under his wing a little bit, and he had bit parts in the movies that he was making, and also, you know, because Gardel was a fantastic musician as well as being a movie star, he encouraged him to play bandoneon as well. So it was quite fortuitous, I suppose, that he met him.
Now, Christina, you bring more of the classical music background to the quartet.
Yeah.
But you were born in Coonamble.
Yep,
I saw from your website this afternoon.
Yeah.
Now, I know that nearby Dubbo has an annual jazz festival, but how does a girl from Coonamble become interested
in saxophone?
And what inspired you to persist with the instrument?
That's a good question. There's not that much to do in Coonamble. I probably shouldn't say that. Well, you can ride horses and stuff, but I didn't ride a horse, and so I had a bit of spare time to practice. And my mum encouraged the four of us to do a bit of practice. And we all played piano, and we all played a second instrument as well. And my dad thought it might be a nice idea for me to play saxophone. And, you know, I was at that age where whatever dad said was perfectly acceptable to me, and so I agreed willingly to play the saxophone that he bought me. And Steve Parry was my first teacher in Dubbo, and he's still out there, and he plays a lot of jazz out there too, I think. Not that he taught me jazz, he was a classical clarinet player, but he plays jazz saxophone. Yeah, we used to go the 100 miles down to Dubbo once a month for a lesson, and just, I don't know, I suppose we practiced what our teacher told us.
Has it always been the soprano saxophone for you? Or?
No, I started on the garden variety. I started on alto. And actually when I went over to London to study, I bought a soprano. I was working in a music shop and I got a really good deal. So I bought one when I was over there.
But you received a Queen's Trust scholarship, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
When was that?
Yikes, that was 96, I think, or 97. Something like that. And I'd not yet finished my undergraduate degree. And I did something a little bit sneaky, I suppose. I did credit points from London and transferred them back to Sydney. Yeah, of course.
Why
and so
not?
I was kind of getting 2 degrees at once, which was excellent. But London, you know, it's a great place to do so many things and see so many concerts. So every other night I was out seeing classical music and jazz and anything that was going, and we were getting free tickets to sit in on rehearsals for the orchestra because I was at Guildhall School of Music and they were right next to the Barbican and the LSO and the LPO, and, you know, I saw Rostropovich conduct and scream at the orchestra, and, you know, like it was unbelievable. It was really great experience.
Now, Matthew, most of my listeners will know you from your work with Informal Troupe, your own trio, and also the Java Quartet, which is a standard on this program. But we also know you're originally from New Zealand. Tell us about your background and how you became to be based here in Sydney.
Well, yeah, I grew up in Auckland, New Zealand, and a lot of musicians, jazz musicians from Auckland have ended up in Sydney, funnily enough. So I met Mike Nock in Auckland when he was he was over there for a workshop. I can't remember the name of the workshop. It was more of a world music thing. But anyway, Mike Nock was involved, and I went along, and I had my saxophone. I would have been really young, 15 or 16. But I was already playing, right into jazz and playing at that time. And I really enjoyed working with him in these workshops. So I chatted to him afterwards and I said, oh, you know, can I come and study with you in Sydney? And he said, sure, just give me a call. And a few years later I did, and did the audition, got into the con, and my plan was to go back afterwards, but I ended up playing in his band, and we did a tour around New Zealand, and I stayed.
And that's got a taste of New Zealand again.
That's 15 or 16 years I've been here now, so I don't know. Is it that long? I don't know. 96 I arrived.
You're older than Aaron, your brother.
Yeah, a couple of years older,
So he
about 4.5 years older.
He followed you over here then, did he?
Pretty much straight away. Like, I started getting gigs within a year, and Aaron was like, oh, hang on. But he was really killing it. Like, when he came over, he would have been 17 or 16, 17, and he came and stayed in my flat, just caused chaos. Just staying up all night drinking and partying and jamming all night, and I almost got thrown out of my flat.
Really?
Such a pain. But at the same time, he came second at the Wangaratta Jazz Competition a few years later, and then it wasn't long until he sort of, I think he was fed up with even, you know, Sydney's scene, which is quite significantly better than Auckland's, but now he's living in London. Well, I mean, he was commissioned to write, a suite?
Yeah.
Or, you know, a suite of tango pieces. Yeah. And Julie and Jeremy, they wrote their suites, and they came up with you know, movement 1, 2, 3, and 4, and of course Marcello came in with just these random pieces, you know, these pieces, and they sort of, you know, they're great pieces,
oh,
but
fantastic.
But I wouldn't,
really
I
well.
he's pretty sure they're not a suite,
right?
and as you might notice, there's only two, and they're sprinkled around, you know, they're not even in order.
Well, we spoke a little bit about the composing process for the group. Everyone seems to be, well, nearly everyone seems to have a bit of a hand in it, apart from yourself, Matt, to this point. Is that right?
To be honest, it's been too busy. I'm just like, oh my God, I wanted to.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's it. And then I looked at my diary and went, next album.
Because you're pretty involved with a number of other groups around town, aren't
Some
you?
Some might say too many.
Yeah. So you're keeping yourself pretty busy.
That's right.
But the sound of this is quite new. It's quite distinctive. There's no drums there. There's
no
pianos. It's
not for this project anyway.
No, no.
But you never know. We might explore that later.
I guess my question is, how difficult is when you've got an album like this and a concept like this, which is sort of trying to blend classical tango, jazz, contemporary jazz together into one package? How difficult is that to market, to promote? Have you found any difficulties unique to this?
It's actually been the opposite.
No, it's been a real positive.
Has
because it? Yeah. We're approaching it from classical and jazz, and then with tango, we've had all this added interest, especially from the tango scene in town. We've been approached by dance classes,
okay,
saying, "Can you come and perform at our dance class at our next Milonga?"
Really,
and we're like,
yeah.
"Very good."
Well, we don't do dance.
Yeah, we're not a tango band.
And then we've had a request from the promoter saying, do you want to, you know, we're going to have the dance floor open. And we're like, dance floor? He says, yeah, let's do it. So it's different.
That's promising, isn't it? I would have thought, you know, coming at from a purely a jazz perspective, I suppose, I would have thought it would be a little bit difficult. People love to pigeonhole music, don't they?
Don't they, Jazz?
Yeah, this is a little harder to pigeonhole, I think. And that's one of the things that we intend to maintain.
Well, that's great. These two, Marcello Mao and Julian Kuhn, they're obviously very essential to the direction you're aiming for with this CD.
Yeah, the sound of it.
What's the... Is the future continuing just to be a quartet, or is there possibilities that...
Well, the future is a saxophone quartet, always a saxophone quartet, and then adding different people to that, like a project that we're undertaking this year is with Bobby Singh on tabla and a sitar player, and doing music that is influenced by Indian tradition. So, and combining that with jazz and classical elements and
so it's almost like the World Saxophone Quartet in inviting various guests along with you.
Yeah, or the Kronos String Quartet,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just kind of crossing over as many different genres as we can.
We should really do just a pure quartet album at some point.
At some point, maybe.
But let's get this one done and dusted first. Abruzzo Tango. Well, when I first heard this, I thought, here we go. This is something that's going to be easily marketed in Europe. It sounds perfect to right. do a European tour.
Oh, let's do it.
Has that, that come across your mind at all?
Well, when do we fly out? not yet. We're still keeping a bit grassroots at the moment, but I think it's certainly would love to tour it overseas.
Absolutely.
I'm actually going over to Europe for a few months this year, mostly for a holiday, but I will be doing a few little gigs around, and I'm very interested to see what the scene's like over there and you know, in depth, and to see how it would be possible to take some of our music over.
Well, it'd be a six-piece band, taking that over, it might be a little bit expensive, but
yeah,
certainly you could pick up a couple of players over there, take the quartet over. And
I mean, touring that far is inhibitive, but I think with hopefully if we can get some assistance somewhere,
yeah, if anyone's
a bit more possible
and wants to give us any more assistance.
Especially in the midst of a global financial crisis since this whole thing started. But have you seen a real effect
not in
the scene?
Not yet. I mean, it's inevitable. It depends on how far we see, you know, it go as far as the recession goes. But I believe that us as musicians and with our income from teaching and gigs and composing or whatever, I think we're almost at the end of the of the effect. So it'll hit, you know, certain people and they might lose their jobs or whatever. And then if they have to make financial sacrifices, maybe entertainment will go or the student, their kids' lessons might go. Who knows? But I think it, maybe in another 6 months' time, a year's time, we'll see if it does affect us. But at the moment,
yeah, no. I hope that people would, it would be the last thing, music would be the last thing, because it just makes people feel so good. They might do without a new suit, but they'll still go out and hear a band and cheer themselves up a bit.
Christina Leonard and Matthew Ottignon, thanks very much for coming into the studio and talking to us about it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's been great.